We're going to be here Saturday morning. We're going to start Bill's story. We're starting the big book for the 10th time on Saturday. We're going to follow through on the book, and we'll incorporate some other information on from the steps we took. And we're going to do Bill's story on Saturday. Sunday night, it's Christmas Eve, but we are going to have a meeting. Stu and I will be here. And I'm going to try to do think of something special for Christmas Eve. We are on step four, promises. I may do that. I'll think about it. See what God tells me to do. So we will be here Christmas Eve. And then tonight we're on step 11. And we covered the big book on pages 86 to 88. And I really think that this book, The Steps We Took, I was showing Tracy before the meeting, is so powerful. We've used it for 10 years. I think I bought over 100 of the copies, used to give them out. You can get it on Amazon. It's Joe McHugh of the original Joe and Charlie. He made the big book come alive. As you see, when we read tonight, it follows the book closely. And he didn't actually write it. He had three people who sat with him and had him talk about the steps, and these were members of AA, but they were very good at writing and putting things together. And we've covered all the steps up to 11 on that book. And so it has very powerful stuff tonight. I think step 11, I was thinking about it a lot, is really, we don't emphasize it enough. We don't talk about it enough at the meetings. We try to talk about it here because we're studying the book. But prayer and meditation was essential part of the beginning recovery in AA. Quiet time was the most important thing. Communication with God. And they talk about tapping the inner resources. And I just made a few notes. I'll try not to talk too long without looking at the sheet because you guys are wandering. Some may leave, but I heard this guy say, for those who believe, there's no explanation is necessary. And for those who won't believe, no explanation will be sufficient. I really like that. You've all met people who don't like the idea of God, and it's just, unless they're willing to let go, open their mind, be willing, and driven by their first step to believe that there's a power that can help them, we can't change them. And he talks about the inner resource. And I think what AA did, the big book, the 12 steps, changed the relationship between man and God. And why do I say that? Because they talk about God is inside of us. And it says on page 55 in the last analysis, that is where he is found. He's deep down inside of us. And they talk about how there's no barrier between me and God, except me. That we don't have to go through a certain religion or any kind of rules. They've made our higher power accessible to us because he's already inside of us. I was going to copy the Sistine Chapel picture of God giving Adam the finger. I'll do it next week. We had the granddaughter today. Things are getting hectic. And she copied this, but I wasn't going to ask her to copy any more tonight. But it's really powerful. And God put himself inside of all of us. I believe that. And since he's inside of me, he's always available to me. All the power, everything that I need is already inside of me. Now, I have a bad cold. On page 63, it says that if we stay close to God and play the role he assigns, he will give us everything we need. It's one of the great promises in the book. The exact words, he provide what we needed if I keep close to him and perform his work well. So the only barrier between me and God's giving me everything I need is if I'm not close to him and if I'm not doing his work. And so I'm the only person that can block me from what I need from God, which is sustenance. It's everything I need. We read from the God, give us our daily bread, our sustenance, our spiritual, all the spiritual power we need to deal with life is already a part of us. And so it's already a part of me. The consciousness of God, when we talk about consciousness of God, it means I'm awake to God. I'm not asleep to God. I'm awake and aware that He exists inside of me. And if that's true, what happens if I'm not awake to God? I'm separated from God, and I'm in my self-will. And the thing that I saw for me and I see for others, and it describes the big book, is that we lived in a world that didn't exist. We lived in a world that we created where God wasn't part of the picture. And then it didn't go very well. And we couldn't see that the only problem that we had was that we were in the wrong world. We were in the world Michael created, not the world that God created. And they talk about when I'm asleep and I'm unconscious to God, I'm back in self. And what was my problem? Self-centeredness. Me running the show. And then I heard this guy say, where I am, God is. It's probably in the scripture. But I really believe that. God never leaves me. He's always there. And so all I have to do is turn to Him and let go of the things in me that are blocking Him. And then I wrote this out. I can be an extension of God's power and live in harmony, or I can be an extension of self and live in disharmony. And if I live in disharmony, that was my whole fourth step. It didn't look good. And I can do that today. What is my choice to be? Remember, God is everything or God is nothing. What am I choosing to be? And then really, I'm a channel through which God can shine, or I can block Him and live in darkness. So I can live in light or I can live in darkness. Which is just my choice? And prayer is a dialogue with God, and the purpose of it, and I heard somebody say this really well, is to align myself with the will of God. The point of prayer isn't to have God align Himself with my will. It's to align myself with God's will. There's a big difference. And so prayer changes me. It changes my thinking and all actions born in thought. Anybody agree with that? If I'm going to pick up the cup, I have to decide to do it. So all my actions will represent my thinking. And what does the big book says? Where's the problem of my alcoholism center? In my mind. And so I have to change the way I see things and think, and prayer changes that. And then meditation is allowing me to listen to God's direction and guidance. I think they say, as a man thinketh, he doeth. And then I saw this, and it's from the Bible. It says, pray without ceasing, rejoice always, pray without ceasing, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God. Think about that. That's essentially what AA says. It says, remember, follow the dictates of the higher power, and you live in a present, wonderful world, no matter the circumstances. And so, how much time do I spend with God? How much time do you spend with God? How much time do you spend with yourself? Think about it. If God's going to be my direction and guidance, how much time do I give to prayer and meditation each day? Now, for me, I pray all the time. I've developed this relationship with my Creator that He's able to tell me when I'm off center. And if I'm not sure, I'll call Mark. You see what I mean? I know when I'm getting off center because I have a relationship with Him, and I'm conscious now for when I'm getting back into me and getting disturbed. And so that's one of the benefits of this conscious contact, is you know when you're not there. You don't feel good. You feel irritable, restless, discontent. You're disturbed. And it says God could and would if He is sought, right? So I must seek Him, and I need His will and His power. And the picture of Michelangelo and God, Adam, and it shows the fingers separating, and I studied it today, and God's fingers pointed down, and Adam's fingers like this. And I was thinking, this is AA. All I have to do is raise my finger and see God, and it's right there. I don't know if that's how He created the picture, but when I saw that Sistine Chapel, I said, that's AA. And the other thing I heard is that the language of God is silence. And it says, be still and know that I'm God. And when you talk about that in AA, God's in the now. It's right now. If I'm in the past or the future of my mind, there's no God. And so I have to be silent to my self-centered thinking. I can't pay attention to it. And if I get out of that and just in the now with God, I can hear Him. And I think what meditation is it tries to take you out of your past and your future and get you right in the now where you're in the silence. And It says what we do is we get rid of everything that's not in the now, and then we're unblocked, and we can gain access and conscious contact. And so that's just some of my thoughts on this. It's so important. You could start right away. You could start reading 84 to 88. You could start praying any kind of prayers. Talk to your sponsor, get some ideas. But just start talking to God, just asking for his direction and his will. And see as you go if you don't feel better. And then it's not a thing you just do in the morning. You can do it. You're supposed to do it all day long, because we're supposed to watch all day for what? Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, fear. Right, Jimmy? And when these crop up, we ask God, which is pray, at once to remove them. So we're walking with God because we're in the world of the Spirit in step 10. That means that we have a relationship with God and we can use that power so we don't have to be blocked. So here he talks about, and this is really so well written, and it follows the big book. And I found that, you know, until I listened to John Charlie, I had no understanding of what was going on in this book. And the more I've studied it, and we read this, the more is revealed. It says, when I let go of the problem, I do not solve the problem. See, I don't solve any problems in here. Who solves my problems? My relationship with God. My problem is I don't have any power to solve any of the problems. So when I let go of the problem, then something else can come in and take it away. And I free myself for other things. And I can go on with my life and forget about that problem. The other thing I've learned is I don't really have any problems unless I make them a problem. Anybody else experience that? I have to put a label on something and make it a problem. If I just make it a circumstance, then I say, okay, this is what's actually happening. And I talk to God. I talk to him a lot. I say, God, this is what's happening. Help me just see how I'm supposed to react to this. And you'd be surprised how you stop overreacting or getting all afraid or angry. You can still do that, but you can stop. You have the power to stop. So it says, step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. Now, why would I want conscious contact with God? Well, the big book tells me, and it's true in my life, on page 24, at certain times I cannot recall into my consciousness the humiliation and defeat of a moment ago. I have no defense against the first drink. Somebody said tonight, we try not to drink, right? The problem with alcoholics is that at a certain time, I cannot bring into my consciousness. I'm not aware that this is a bad idea to drink. And then it'll make sense and I'll do it. Nothing can come between that thought and the drink except God. So when I have conscious contact with God, he could say, bad idea. This is not a good idea. And he gives me a power to turn away from my will. And so if I don't have conscious contact, I'm on my own. Now, when I looked at my life, it did my fourth step. I saw what my life was like without conscious contact. It's not pretty. And it can still be that way today. And I don't want to live that way anymore. And we pray only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. So I want knowledge and power. And I want knowledge of God's will. And being smart won't help me. Memorizing the big book won't help me. I need knowledge of his will. I have to submit to his will, not what I want. And how you know when you're not doing that? Your day doesn't go well. You don't feel good. You're irritable, restless. You're angry. You're fearful. You're judging. So he says step 11 is the culmination of all the other steps. It really is. It's not talked about a lot. There are three pages on it in the big book, and we went through them in detail. We're going to go through them again in this handout. It says we've taken all the other steps to lead us to this step. Because step 10 is where we live in the world of the Spirit all day, and step 11 is how we try to improve our conscious contact, and 10 and 11 go together. Does that make sense? And the more you do step 10, the more you get in contact with God. And it says in 12 and 12, he says, inventory, prayer, and meditation separately are powerful, but when they're interwoven, it's an unshakable foundation for life. So we have to inventory, pray, and meditate all the time. And when we do that, our lives get better. It says step one has to be taken so we can take step two. I think that's a very good idea. The steps are also in order because they need to be done in order. Now, step one is where you have to understand your problem. If you don't know what's wrong with you, you can't know what the solution should look like and be. And the solution to our step one is that we're powerless to run our lives, and I'm powerless to keep from drinking or using. And I need a power to restore me to sanity. And so now, how do I get the power? Well, that's what the book's all about. You start with step three. So you have to understand, if you really take your step one, you'll be willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself. If you really are completely defeated, completely hopeless, you've convinced of the hopelessness and futility of your life as you're living it, it's not going to take much for you to be, at least be willing that there's something out there that can help you. Now, AA is supposed to convince you that. You're supposed to see people here whose lives are an effing mess like yours is when you come in, and they've been able to change. And they have a life now that's better than they could have imagined. It's not perfect, but it's better. And you can believe that if you do what they did, you'll have what they have. And that's what the big book is. It's a testimony of their experience of people who were hopeless and futile and could not survive, and they did this, and look what they had. So the big book is a testimony. You don't have to like it. You don't have to believe it or anything, but it's their experience. So what they're telling you is, okay, if you're where they were, do this and tell us what happened. They don't tell you to do it. Nobody ties you down and makes you read the big book and write a four-step. But if you do it, tell us the result. See what happens in your life. And then you'll tell somebody else. But you have to do the experiment. We don't tell you what it's like for you. We just tell you, your life isn't working. You might as well try this. What else are you going to do? Now, there are people who keep giving you other options. They still think they have other options. And so when they come to AA, and it is the last house on the block, and this is the last thing to do, then people do it. And Sandy Beach says they do it only because they've run out of other options. As long as an alcoholic thinks he has any other options, he's not going to work the steps. It says in the big book, people don't really want to do this. The searching, fearless, moral inventory right that's required to consume the steps. But we do it because we don't have a choice. And then the more we do it, the more we know how it works. So we keep wanting to do it better. But just the start, all you need is willingness and open mind. And it says these steps gave the decision in step three is to turn our will and lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Has anybody read that before? Anybody seen it on the wall? Mm-hmm. There's a really important word in there. Care. I don't give God my will and my life. I turn it over to the care of God. What does that mean? I have to prepare myself for God's care. I have to be able to receive his care. I have a car. It's not going to get worked on until I take it into the shop. And if I keep it outside the shop, it's not going to be taken care of. God takes care of us, but we have to go to him and put ourselves under his care. So what does that mean? It means you have to give up on self-will. It means you can't run the show anymore. You have to give it to God, and then God will take care of you. How that happens, you don't have to worry. You just stop running your show and see what happens. So that's all we do. We put ourselves under the care of God. And it's a turning point. It's a change in direction. Now, how do you place yourself under the care of God? You do the steps. The steps are designed to place us in a relationship with God that's different than we had before. So what blocks me from God's care? Me, my thinking, what I think I need, what I think is best for me, my ego, my character defects, my self-will, my self-centeredness. So it says next we have to carry out the decision. And so there are certain things that block us from God's care and direction. Remember it says in step four, we want to face and be rid of the things in us that are blocking us from God. God's already there inside of me. He's ready to go. He's got the tools. He's the power, but I'm plugged into the wrong socket. Yeah. I'm plugged into the Michael socket instead of the God socket. It wasn't pretty. I want to tell you, when I look back, it was not pretty. And I don't want to live like that anymore. And it says, we could not get on turning over our wills and lives over the care of God until we remove the things that are blocking us. So you hear at meetings, I turned it over and I took it back. I've heard that a lot. Well, I don't know what that means. You're not turning over or taking back. You're making a decision to put yourself under God's care by getting rid of the things that are blocking you from God. And then God will take care of you. So you never really turn over and take it back. You just never were under the care of God. You made an intellectual decision, but you didn't make the spiritual decision and follow through with the actions. And we don't know how to do that. We don't know how to do step three. I didn't know how to do it, but the book tells us how to do it. That's why we study this book. It's very specific directions on how to do that. And when you do the process, it just works and it happens. You don't even realizing it. And then suddenly on page 83, you realize God's doing for you what you cannot do for yourself. You're at finished step nine. And so step 10, 4 through 9, then 10 is a continuation of step 4 through 9 all day long. It says, as a result of the actions of step 4 through 10, we removed the things that were blocking us from God. Not perfectly, but we removed enough so that we could start beginning to get God's direction. We've removed enough self-centeredness in steps 4 through 9, doing it the best we can, because like as Linda and others said, in the beginning you can only do so much. You can only see so much truth. But it's the beginning. You're beginning to change your relationship with God and put your life in order. You're asking God to be your director in step 3. Step 4 and 5 and 6 and 7, you're getting right in your mind. You're being able to see how your thinking is wrong. And 8 and 9, you're getting right with the world. It's a process you do the rest of your life. It says through prayer and meditation. It's not medication. I thought it was for that. I kept waiting. Where are the pills? Through prayer and meditation, we can receive God's will for us at the power of carry out. So if I inventory and face and be rid of the things blocking me, and then I pray and I meditate and I hear God's will and power for me, things will change. It's guaranteed to happen if you do it. It's happened for me and others. You can't explain it. And it says if we could do that, we have carried out the decision made in step 3. And here's something that's not talked about a lot. Step 3 and 11 are the pillars of the steps. I mean, they really are. Everything in step 4 through 10 is getting you ready to do 11 all the time. And you're willing and you're eager to continue to do prayer and meditation because you can see the results. It's, the more you get closer to God, the more you want to be closer to God. I can't explain it. But if you do it, you understand what I mean. And others can talk about that. And the other thing I wrote is that we make a decision and then we receive. We receive everything we need if we follow through in the decision by getting rid of all the stuff in me that's not God. Sandy Beach said that, you know, Michelangelo, when he made the statue of David, he took this big piece of marble. It's a huge thing. I don't know how I did it. It's like 30 feet. Huge, big. And he cut away, and they said, how'd you do it? I cut away everything that wasn't David. And Sandy Beach gives this talk. It was at the Akron, one of the anniversary, and he says what he found when he peeled away everything was the real him. And that was the greatest gift you can get, is you see the real person you are, not the person God created. We feel bad when you come in here. Anybody feel bad when you come in here? We've done a lot of stupid, bad things. And we have a lot of shame and guilt, but we realize that that wasn't the real me. That was the person I created, not God. And I don't have to be that way anymore. It says, this amounts to changing the direction of a human life. It's not to say that this direction can be changed by these two steps, but they're all necessary. And it says, if we change the direction of a life, we change the life. So really all we are willing to ask you to do is turn away from the direction you were in, which is your self-centeredness, to a different path. Remember it says, rarely have we seen a person follow this path. We're giving you a path that's a new path. You may not like the path, you might think it's going to work, but we don't care. Just try it. Stay on that path and see what happens. And you know why it's going to work? Because it's not my path. If it's my path, or if I take the A path and I make it my path, I add a few things, you know, I'm not going to go down the same path. Thoroughly followed their path. It says, we're willing to turn our direction of a God who has always been there, even when we were blocked from him. See, some people say, well, you know, where was God, and I'm mad at God, and this and that. It's so ridiculous, because God's always there, we just turned away. And we got mad at God when we had our self-centered prayers, and we wanted him to help us get our will, and it didn't happen. So we said, well, gee, that did work. I'm not going to use him. And you see, we had the whole wrong motives and the whole wrong thinking. And our lives will become different as a result of this process. It says anybody who can begin to use step 11 effectually has had a spiritual awakening. Why? Because if you're beginning to reach out to God and meditate and pray and ask for his guidance all day long, you have a relationship with God. You know he's there. If I have fear, I don't want to waste any more time in fear. I'm getting old. My days are numbered. And I don't want to waste any more time in fear. I say, it's ridiculous. God, it's ridiculous. It's not even real. And I said, I don't need to run my life anymore. You take care of that. Get me back in the now. And I just stop. And he does. He takes it away. I don't know. I judge every once in a while. I haven't judged during the meeting yet. It's early. But when I start judging, I say, well, God, that's bad. That's not right. That's not loving and kind and tolerant. Change it. Help me change if I get irritated. The same thing. I don't want to waste any more time being separated from God. It's just a waste. In fact, the real regret I have is that I didn't do this 40 years ago. You know, that's why I see somebody young like Thomas, and it's such a blessing if you can get it young, and you don't have to waste all those years. I don't think anybody who's done the steps and had a spiritual awakening said, gee, I wish I'd waited longer. You know, gee, I wish I had done the steps so fast. Damn. And it says, he or she has tapped that unsuspected inner resource of strength. And so we're always talking about words that are new in the big book. And Lori's not here tonight, but we'll tell her. I saw another one, unsuspected inner resource. It doesn't say I tapped the inner, it's unsuspected. You know why? Because I didn't know it was there. I never used it. I never used God. We asked for God's help to get what we wanted, but I never really had a relationship with God. And it's unsuspected, but it's there. And that's why when you try to explain people the steps, it's hard. Just say, do it. See what happens. See if things change. And it says, the 12th and final step is where we take the message to other people. In this chart, the charts in this book are really good. It says in step 3, we give up our directions. It sounds pretty easy, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It's hard to do. I have new people. I give them simple directions. They don't do it. I said, well, who told you not to do it? I did. I said, well, do this. Why? Because they need to get used to listening to somebody besides them. I mean, I'm not telling them to run naked through the street. I'm just telling them to get a notebook and read a chapter of the big book. You know, and they say, well, I didn't need a notebook. I said, well, why not? I said, who told you that? It's the same person that's going to tell you you don't need to go to meetings anymore. It's the same person that tells you that it's okay to take a drink. We don't want to listen to our thoughts anymore if they're self-centered. And then we want to receive God's direction, so we have to let go. And Sandy Beach and others said, the whole program is just letting go. Letting go of me and what I think and my old ideas. It says we have to let go of old ideas. Why? Absolutely. Results, no, right, Linda? You can't, if you're holding on any old idea, it's going to block you from God. Why? Because they're your ideas. It took me a long time to figure that out. What's wrong with old ideas? Because they're mine. And I think they're true, and they're usually not. They're usually not true. I didn't say the set-aside prayer tonight, but I usually say that God set aside everything I think I know about him, the book, the steps, recovery, so I can have an open mind. And it says it takes continuous practice. And then I'm going to finish in a minute or two. Page 84 to 88 is actually, if you read those pages, and some of us read them all the time, I've read the book so much I've got them really memorized. It's a form of meditation. 86 to 88, if you listen to it and you meditate on the words, it's a form of guided meditation. What do you do during the day? How do you stay in fit spiritual condition? What must you carry all day? What do you do at night? What do you pray for in the morning? What do you do if you're indecisive? What do you ask God throughout the day? What do you do when you pause, you see? And you can meditate on that. There's a speaker, Dave F., in Fellowship of the Spirit. It's on XA, and on the last talk, he does a 15 minutes where he reads that, meditates on it. And so I'll put that on and listen to it, meditate with Dave. I've never met him, but he's helped me a lot. There are a lot of ways you can do this. But see what works. It's an individual thing. He goes on here at the end of this page. He says he doesn't know how Bill wrote this. I don't either. I don't know where he got these ideas from. I've been studying the books that they used to write the big book, and there are a lot of these ideas there. I think Reverend Shoemaker helped him a lot. He was very instrumental in the spiritual message in this book. And he says, and then in the top of the first power, he says it had to keep it simple, and he did, because the guy who wrote this chapter on 84 to 88 was not a spiritual guru. Be good, Shane. Have a good holiday. He's not a spiritual guru. He was just us. But he had God guided him. These pages are laid out so simply. And it says on the second paragraph, it's a spiritual kindergarten for anyone who's new. And so I meditate on 84 to 88. I think about it during the day. I had a God pole at work, and I had the spiritual checklist on the desk. Because all day long, people are trying to get you off the beam, right? Well, you're in life. And so you want to stay with God. You don't want to get too far off the beam. And he calls these exercises the four pillars of prayer meditation. And it's the way it's covered in 86-88 at night, the morning, indecision, and prayer. And really, it gives you everything you need if you meditate on that to begin a relationship with God. The other thing is, it says we must carry a vision of God's will in all of our activities. Anybody remember that? It's in the book, page 85. It says we must carry this. It doesn't say you might want to do this. And so how do you know what God's will is, a vision? You meditate. You ask God. You think about what the qualities of God. You have your spiritual checklist. The big book talks about love, patience, tolerance, kindness, love and tolerance. The other thing that I heard, forgot to mention with this, I talked too long, is a lot of people liked Emmett Fox, the people who helped write this book. He was a famous writer in the 30s. He was a minister. He had an interesting way of seeing scripture, very powerful. And he talked about the golden key. He wrote this thing. And basically, to break that whole thing down, the golden key of all prayer is God is love. And if we think of God as love and just focus on that, that will get your relationship with God. Think about that. And it says love and tolerance is our code. And so to me, God is love. God is within inside of me, and he's the channel of the peace. We will look at the St. Francis prayer, true, when we work on step 11. I want to be a channel of God's peace. Everything that's in that St. Francis prayer is already inside of me. I just have to let it come out, open the channel. So we'll stop there.